the heart of our nation's capital. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. Hope you've had a fantastic week. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss, and honored to have you on board with us. Coming up on Washington Watch today, following the deadly attacks from October 7th in the invasion of Israel by Hamas, President Biden then pledged rock-solid and unwavering support for Israel. But now, almost 6 months removed from those attacks and facing election pressure here at home, the Biden administration has walked back much of that support.
Is the president threatening to withhold aid to Israel if they do not make these changes?
The president made it clear that our policies with respect to Gaza will be dependent upon our assessment of how well the Israelis make changes and implement changes to make the situation in Gaza better for the Palestinian people.
Well, that was an exchange yesterday between a reporter and National Security Council spokesman John Kirby during the White House press briefing. I don't know about you, but to me, that doesn't sound like rock solid and unwavering support. The question now is, how have these and other critical remarks from the administration been received in Israel? And what is this going to mean for the Israeli war effort? Well, CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell will be joining me here in just a few moments from Jerusalem. And we're continuing our daily segment this week on election integrity, coinciding with the release of my new book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. And by the way, let me just say, I'm thrilled that this not only has now reached the top one, the first place in new releases, but is now officially one of the top 10 bestsellers at Amazon. And thank you so much for your support. If you've not yet gotten your copy, we encourage you to do so. This is an incredibly critical issue, election integrity. Well, Georgia Congressman Andrew Clyde will be joining me in a little while to discuss the strong new laws that have recently passed by the Georgia state legislature to protect election integrity. And he'll also share how Democrats in Washington, D.C., where, of course, he now serves, have blocked his efforts to prevent illegal immigrants from voting. Wow. And the left's attack on women's sports continues. This week, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers vetoed a bill protecting sports for women and girls in his state. Washington News, Washington Watch News reporter Victoria Marshall will be joining me later on with that story. And this is very interesting. As Western culture becomes increasingly hostile to Christianity, even some prominent atheists recognize the benefits of living in a nation that embraces Christian values.
If I had to choose between Christianity and Islam, I choose Christianity every single time. I find that I like to live in a culturally Christian country, although I do not believe a single word of the Christian faith.
Well, that was atheist Richard Dawkins during an interview earlier this week, and historian Bill Federer will be joining me for a conversation on how biblical values have led to blessings on America and what the alternatives are. So we've got a lot to cover, a lot coming your way. You don't want to miss a single bit of it, but in case by any chance you do, you can always archive this program as well as many other programs at our website, tonyperkins.com. We, of course, urge you to keep that website handy. All right, jumping into today's program, this Sunday will mark 6 months since Hamas conducted its deadly terrorist invasion on Israel. In the immediate days and the weeks following those attacks, we witnessed unity in Israel, as they watched an incredible attack, an existential threat on their country. But now, 6 months later, as much of the world, including the Biden administration, turns on Israel, we're seeing a rapid erosion of unity and support. Is that also happening in Israel? Well, joining me now to discuss this from Jerusalem is Chris Mitchell, the Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Jody.
Well, thank you. Listen, I played a clip at the opening of the show. I want to play another one here. This is Secretary Antony Blinken yesterday. Let me play this and get your remarks.
Israel is a democracy. Hamas, a terrorist organization. And democracies place the highest value on human life, every human life. If we lose that reverence for human life, we risk becoming indistinguishable from those we confront.
Okay, so Chris, what do you think? How have these kind of remarks coming from the Biden administration been received in Israel?
Well, Jody, I think a lot of people feel that comment by Antony Blinken was offensive to many Israelis. They feel that there's no comparison between them and the way Hamas has conducted this war. Israel has been doing since the very beginning, and what they do in all of their conflicts, do what they can to protect civilian lives. Even though this, there tragically have been Palestinians affected, killed in this war. And I would add that the inflated, the figure of 33,000 Palestinians, many people over here, is inflated by Hamas for propaganda purposes. But to compare the way that that Israel has conducted this war by trying to alert civilians to get out of harm's way, by using leaflets, by sending text messages, by making phone calls to get out of a war zone, is sometimes, many people, military historians say, would be unprecedented, that the IDF actually telegraphs exactly what they're going to do. It actually puts IDF soldiers at risk. And I know I've talked to some Israelis here, and they know that their sons or daughters could be in harm's way because of the way the IDF conducts its mission.
Yeah, it really is remarkable the steps that Israel goes to try to prepare the way. And yet we see this shifting taking place around the world, certainly here with the Biden administration. Is all of this kind of putting the prime minister in a corner? What's kind of his path forward in all of this?
Well, it's very difficult. I was asking somebody we interviewed on our program earlier today. I said, it's this sort of Benjamin Netanyahu's Churchill moment. He said, well, he actually called it a Judah Maccabee moment. If you remember, the Maccabees revolted back over 2,000 years ago. And I think a lot of Israelis and many Jews around the world think this is a time when Benjamin Netanyahu really has to make a decision for the state of Israel, for the Jewish people, whether or not they're going to submit to sort of the dictates of the United States or actually have to go it alone. They do feel isolated right now and alone, but I think they also feel resolute in the sense that they believe that there's no way that they can lose this war. There's no way they can allow Hamas to remain a viable entity in the Gaza Strip. And they remember October 7th, when 1,200 people were murdered, when over 200 were kidnapped, and many of those are still left in Hamas captivity. Jody, just a number of weeks ago, I was in Khan Yunis, and I got to go into one of those tunnels and actually saw the labyrinth, over the length of the London subway, and just the spider web throughout all of Gaza. And in that particular tunnel, there were 12 hostages that were kept, three that had been released. But they know, they meaning the Israelis know, that they can't afford that Hamas would win this war or not lose this war. They see as existential because they're not only fighting Hamas, they're fighting Hezbollah up on the north, the Houthis, and the head of the snake being Iran itself.
Well, I know that you know this, Chris, but there are millions here praying and supporting Israel. They feel alone, and in many regards, they are, from what's happening in nations around the world, but they are not alone, and there are many of us praying and supporting them. What is the on-the-ground perspective of the political climate there in Israel right now?
Well, first of all, Jody, I would say, you know, they understand that evangelical Christians, particularly in the U.S. and around the world, are really standing with them, praying for them. That really gives them a boost because they really do feel isolated, and particularly more so now than the U.S., traditionally Israel's greatest ally, seems to be turning its back on them. The political climate here, I would say, is pretty steadfast in the sense that they see that they want to rally around Prime Minister Netanyahu. And the reason I say that is we also see a concerted effort, it seems, and this is what I've been hearing over here, Jody, a concerted effort to undermine the coalition government of Benjamin Netanyahu. And a number of Israelis on the left side of the ledger, they may not agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu, but they certainly agree with the war goals that the war cabinet has. And they certainly don't want the U.S. to try to undermine through a number of steps, including the speech by Senator Schumer on the Senate floor. They apparently, Benny Gantz, who's one of the political opposition leaders, he called for new elections just a couple of days ago. Many Israelis don't want that. They don't want new elections right now, certainly in the middle of a war. And so I think the political climate, and I would say in the last few days, that some of the divisiveness that was before October 7th has emerged a little bit. But I think there are other Israelis that are saying, listen, we're in the middle of a war. We can't afford elections, and we certainly don't want to be undermined by other countries that want to come in and dictate what happens politically here.
Yeah, I can't imagine what handicap would result if there were new elections in the middle of a war. I mean, that would be devastating, wouldn't it?
Oh, definitely. And right now, I think Israelis militarily, they seem right now, they're on the cusp of maybe trying to eliminate Hamas or at least defeat Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And that would be the remaining four battalions that are burrowed in the many more than a million refugees there in Rafah. So that militarily is the next step in Gaza. But also, Jody, Israelis are looking at the northern border as well. Hezbollah, a much greater enemy, a much larger arsenal of missiles and rockets. And right now you have about 80,000 Israelis that are up there that have left their homes, their livelihood, and they're living in hotels, even here in Jerusalem. And so you really have a whole zone right there on Israel's northern border that that almost 100,000 Israelis have left. They know that somehow they're going to have to deal with that after they deal with Hamas in the Gaza Strip.
Well, we are on this end continuing to pray for and support Israel and all of you, Chris, who are in the midst of all of this. We were calling for a specific effort coming up on Pentecost Sunday for prayer and support all across America. We will continue to do all we can. Thank you, Chris Mitchell from CBN News. Always great to talk to you. And your insight is so valuable. Thanks for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thanks so much, Jody.
All right, stay safe. Friends, coming up, Congressman Andrew Clyde will be joining me for our election integrity segment. Again, I don't have to tell you how critical this issue is for our country. We must get this right, this issue of election integrity. We will bring more information on this topic your way right after the break, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Thank you so much for joining us today. All right, in the budget battles that took place on Capitol Hill last month, Republican members of the House Appropriations Committee fought to include language to prohibit illegal immigrants from voting in elections. You wouldn't think that that battle would even be necessary, but it was. And believe it or not, Democrats had that common sense law removed from the final draft. So what can we draw from all of this? And how can we make out the end of it all in terms of what the left looks at as it relates to election integrity? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Andrew Clyde. He serves on that House Appropriations Committee, and he represents the 9th Congressional District of Georgia. Congressman Clyde, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Thank you, Jody. Great to be with you, as always.
Well, listen, you know, it's tactics like this from the left, the ones that you saw there on the Appropriations Committee during all the budget battles, Democrats pushing for illegal immigrants to vote. It's stuff like that, quite frankly, that motivated me to write the book that we've talked about off and on all week, Sacred Trust. Election integrity is critical. And when you have Democrats voting, fighting in behalf of illegals to vote, that's just that could impact our entire republic. Give me your thoughts on that.
Absolutely, it could, Jody. In fact, I love the name of your book, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, Sacred Trust, because that is exactly what we the people give our government, and that is the sacred trust that elections will be free and fair, and that it will be one vote, one person, one vote, there will not be cheating in there. But the Democrats don't care about that. That's one of the reasons that I believe that they stripped that amendment from the appropriations bill. They also stripped the amendment in the Commerce Science Justice bill that said that that only citizens would be counted in the apportionment of congressional seats, which is also an integrity issue. You know, how can you have illegals being counted in the determination of how many congressional seats each state gets? So, you know, those two issues are very, very closely linked together. But election integrity is truly the number one issue that we have to protect.
It certainly is one of the top ones to me, Congressman Cloud. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, and fortunately, in our home state, you and I both are from Georgia, there's been some significant effort coming from the state legislature in Georgia trying to bolster election integrity efforts. I have been encouraged by this. How about you, your reaction to what the state legislature has done?
Well, after the 2020 election, when the state passed SB 202, which greatly improved election integrity, and then this particular term that I believe there are three bills out there right now awaiting the governor's signature, and he needs to sign them, in my opinion. But these bills will absolutely further increase the integrity of elections here in Georgia, because it is so absolutely critical that we make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. And as we have seen, cheating has happened here in Georgia, and that's got to stop. You know, that has to be one of the main focuses of our government here, is to ensure that we have this kind of integrity.
We know there's example after example, as you talk about that, of the left denying election results, and yet somehow that now has become the go-to insult, if you will, for behavior that they now say is beyond the pale, and yet they've done it for years. Why do you think this shift, even from the Democrats, to now attack anyone who questions or has a problem with what happened in an election?
Oh, yeah, both at the federal level and at the state level. You can go back to 2016, where Hillary Clinton denied that President Trump won, and Hakeem Jeffries, now the minority leader in the House, he did the same thing, denied that President Trump won. And then all the way here down to Georgia, where Stacey Abrams denied that Governor Kemp won the election. I mean, yeah, but they have figured out that a way to cheat, in my opinion, and therefore, when the election is not fair and free, then if you challenge that result, then you become an election denier. And honestly, to me, we are election integrity champions. We are not election deniers. We believe in free and fair elections for everyone.
Yeah, it looks to me like it's all just a big effort to discourage conservatives from even participating in the electoral process, because they're going to be harassed if they see anything that's alarming and bring it to light. You know, just this week, we saw this fully on display through how the left targeted Jeff Clark, an attorney of former President Trump, simply for doing his job for a client. In fact, hey, let me play a clip here. This is what Harry McDougall, Clark's attorney, said during a disciplinary proceeding in D.C.
Essentially, the argument on seriousness is that Mr. Clark committed heresy against faith in the election. That is, in essence, a religious test. You must have faith in the election, or you cannot be a lawyer in the District of Columbia.
How concerning is this to you?
Well, this is tremendously concerning. I mean, when you have the Washington, D.C., this panel of, you know, that wants to take away this guy's ability to practice law in the District of Columbia simply because he challenges something that is wrong. I mean, it's astounding, but that's the city of Washington, D.C. That is how liberal and left they have gone, and which is why we need to clean up the city of Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. Yeah, and if we keep going down this path, then no attorneys are going to be willing to fight for clear elections. All right, in the last few seconds that we have remaining, 30 seconds or so, what message would you have for voters who are concerned about election integrity coming into this cycle?
Well, I would say, Jody, that they must get out and vote. You have to vote. You know, the entire intent of the left is to discourage us, as was mentioned a little earlier, so that we don't get out and vote. I think that's one of the reasons why we lost so badly here in Georgia in the runoff in our Senate elections back in 2020. We have to get out and vote. We have to ensure that the conservative majority that we still have here in Georgia and literally across the nation gets out and votes. Do not let them discourage you from voting.
Congressman Andrew Clyde, you're a hero. Thank you so much. Appreciate you joining us today on Washington Watch. All right, friends, stay tuned. After the break, Democrats' efforts to allow men to encroach on women's sports continues. We'll bring it all your way after the break. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you on board with us. All right, we may officially be in April, but we're still in March Madness, for those of you who are sports fans. But we've seen a growing interest in women's basketball through this whole time of March. And at a time when female sports are being infiltrated and, quite frankly, upended by gender-confused men. And while some on the left are certainly coming to their senses on this issue, there are still many who are absolutely fine with not only subverting female sports, but also putting women and girls in harm's way. Well, here to discuss this and to make her debut here on this program is Washington Watch News reporter Victoria Marshall. Victoria, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me, Jody.
Well, it is our honor indeed. All right, let's get started on this whole thing. Wisconsin governor, a Democrat governor, I might add, Tony Evers, vetoed a bill that came to his desk this past week. And it was a bill that was aimed at protecting women's sports, would have prohibited biological males from competing alongside females. Tell us a little bit about this bill, specifically what it would have done, what it would have accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, simply, it was meant to protect female athletes in Wisconsin playing sports in their high schools, plain and simple. It basically was, these women are being forced to compete against biological men in their schools, and so it's trying to protect them and allow them to have fair competition, as well as protect their own bodily safety, because there's been multiple instances across the country of female athletes being injured at the hands of transgender-identifying men who say that they're women, and so they get to play in these female sports. So it was just to protect these female athletes at the high school level in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it just sounds to me, Victoria, like this is nothing but common sense. Why in the world would the governor not sign this? Did he give any excuses why he vetoed it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. He basically said he wasn't going to sign the bill because it was anti-gay, it was discriminatory, it would harm the safety of the LGBTQ community, high school community in Wisconsin, and that it would harm their mental health. Of course, him not signing the bill means that he's jeopardizing the safety of female athletes who now have to compete with biological men and who will also harass and intimidate them physically, as well as can sexually harass them or sexually abuse them by being in female lockers. And also, I think it's really ironic that Evers said that he wants to save the mental health of these LGBTQ individuals, when actually, I mean, the last time I checked, affirming delusions about reality or identity actually harms one's mental health. I mean, you see it in study after study. I mean, the Epoch Times just reported that transgender identifying individuals who have gone through gender realignment surgeries, which means, you know, changing their genitals to another gender, so mutilating their bodies, their rate of suicide doubles after they go through with those surgeries. So what that means is that affirming delusions, an individual's delusions about reality, hurts their mental health. So this bill is not going to help the LGBTQ community in Wisconsin, and it's certainly not going to help female athletes.
A great point, and frankly, very difficult to argue with that. And yet, we continue to see, it seems like now, week after week after week, we're seeing another example of a female athlete being injured by a biological male. In fact, just in Massachusetts recently, there was another incident of a high school basketball girl player being injured by a biological male. And yet the governor there continues to support these policies. Why is that?
It's really just the culture of, I mean, it's just the PC culture where we're just supposed to affirm everyone. Affirm their delusions about identity, about what is, like, what actually leads to human flourishing. And it's about affirming the delusions of protected classes of people. But that actually doesn't help them. It hurts them when you allow them to, when you affirm their delusions about their own identity. And also with that incident with the Massachusetts boy harming some females that he was playing basketball with in the women's division in his high school, he actually it was also reported that he was spying on his, also his female colleagues in the locker rooms and making lewd comments about them. So he was actually sexually harassing his teammates and players. So this isn't just, you know, affirming these poor LGBT gay folks. It's actually you're helping them sexually harass women. It's horrible.
Wow. And, you know, unfortunately, this is not just happening in the United States. We're seeing this type of thing. And we're seeing some countries come to their senses, but we're seeing others that are experiencing similar issues that we're doing here in the United States. But there's a lot of public consensus against men competing in women's sports, I think, is pretty well grounded. How do we translate all this into action? Final question for you. What do we need to do to help protect women?
I would just encourage people to talk to their friends and family about this issue, to shift the Overton window in favor of common sense. A lot of people are afraid about speaking out about that men are men and women are women because of just the culture and how hostile the culture has been to common sense. But these are our daughters, these are our wives, these are our sisters. And I'd really encourage, you know, you to get involved with local school board races, local government, to make your voice heard and to stand up for what is right.
Thank you so much, Victoria Marshall. Great to have you on Washington Watch. Welcome.
Thank you so much,
Jody. All right, friends, stay tuned. After the break, we're going to be discussing remarks by a prominent atheist who is happy to be living in a country that is culturally Christian. And there's good reason why he would say that. We'll talk about it. You don't want to miss it. Coming your way right after the break. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Happy Friday to you. Hard to believe the weekend is already before us, but glad to have you on board with us. All right, as we wrap up the week, I'd like to discuss an interesting conversation that took place this past Easter Sunday. You may be aware, you probably are aware, of Richard Dawkins, the biologist, the Oxford professor, who rose to some significant degree of prominence in recent decades as he became identified with what's often called the New Atheist Movement. What Dawkins has spent, as you probably know, much of his life attacking Christian beliefs. But as our culture as a whole becomes increasingly hostile to Christianity, Dawkins is stepping back. He doesn't like what he's seeing.
Choose between Christianity and Islam. I choose Christianity every single time. I find that I like to live in a culturally Christian country, although I do not believe a single word of the Christian faith.
All right, he doesn't believe a word of the Christian faith, but he would rather live in a Christian country than any other country anytime. That, of course, was Dawkins. That was this past Sunday during an interview with UK-based LBC, which is a leading Britain's conversation. But for centuries, Christians and biblical values have blessed our culture, both for Christians and non-Christians. That's the point. Things like service, like compassion, honesty, respect for authority, respect for one another. The list goes on and on and on. And as these Christian values are attacked, even those who are hostile to the Christian faith don't like the alternatives that are coming. Well, joining me now to discuss this is William Federer. He's the president of Amerisearch. He's a host of the American Minute and Faith in History. He's the author of many, many books, including America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations. Bill, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to see you again.
Jody, great to be with you.
All right. Are you at all surprised by a famous atheist like Richard Dawkins coming out with these kind of remarks and that he really feels this way?
Well, I think he's seeing the logical conclusion of the path of deconstructing a society. The most common form of government is gangs, and it's a hierarchical structure where if you're friends with the gang leader or the king, you're worth more. If you're not their friend, you're worth less. If you're their enemy, you're a slave or you're dead. And then the alternative is to take the power of a king and give it to the people. But unless the people have morals and virtue, it turns into chaos. And out of that chaos, they want a king again. So it's just a keep going around the circle, so to speak. And so when you look at history, the first instance of a nation without a king was ancient Israel. And it worked for 400 years without a king because everybody was taught the law and they were personally accountable to God and follow it. Well, what happened with ancient Israel? The priests stopped teaching the law and every man did what was right in their own eyes. And you had Eli, the high priest, his own sons are sleeping with women in the tent where the Ark of the Covenant is, and another Levite with a silver graven image, and then another Levite with a concubine, and they're traveling and the house is surrounded by sodomites and the poor girl's raped to death. And by the time you're grossed out with the story, you read this line, every man did that which was right in their own eyes. And it turns into this lawless chaos that they all go to Samuel the prophet and they say the self-government system's not working. We want to be like the other countries. We want a king. And so America, we looked to this first 400-year period as the model. It was the Hebrew Republic. That's why they taught Hebrew at Yale and Harvard. So we were a country set up with this self-restraint. But as we move in the direction of having fewer morals, it turns into more chaos. And out of the chaos, you're reverting back to a gang style of government. And so I think Dawkins is seeing the logical end of the years of tearing down a Judeo-Christian culture. It's just going to turn into lawlessness. And out of that lawlessness, power is going to reconcentrate in many areas of the country to Islam. But others to communism, to some authoritarian type of structure.
That is a powerful description of the history of it all. And it's absolutely true. I mean, we were established on limited government in this country. But that is impossible. And our founders told us this, as no one knows any better than you. In fact, you largely helped teach me so many of these beliefs that I hold these days. But it's impossible to have limited government without people who are self-governing and capable of self-governing with an authentic understanding of right and wrong. And for that reason, our founders said things like religion and morality are indispensable supports. You cannot have limited government without self-governing, authentic right and wrong that comes from religion and morality. And I think that is what someone like Richard Dawkins is talking about when he says he would choose Christianity over Islam or some of these others any day of the week. It certainly appears as though he understands, at least he may not be able to articulate, but he understands there's a difference, that a Christian-based culture is much better than a culture that is hostile to Christianity and that tears down those Christian institutions. Are we barking up the right tree here?
Well, I think you're making some excellent observations. You know, one of the studies that I like is J.D. Unwin. He was an Oxford anthropologist, and he wrote a book in 1934 called Sex and Culture. And he observed 80 major civilizations over 5,000 years of history, and he found some trends. And the trends were sexual promiscuity always precedes the collapse of a civilization. And he said civilizations go through life cycles, like a plant goes from a seedling to a full-grown plant, mature, and then it ends up getting worm-eaten, an insect, and it dies. And so civilizations go through four stages. First is a period of pain and poverty. They make it through a war or a famine, and they work hard, and they become productive. And then they work together, and they become patriotic. And then they become prosperous. And then they want to enjoy their prosperity, and they become promiscuous and less disciplined, sort of like an athlete. When he's young, he's focused and disciplined, and he wants that championship and exercises. And then finally he gets it, and he's the champ for a couple seasons. And then he gets lazy and indulgent and eats fatty foods and couch potato. And in his mind, he still thinks he's the champ. but he gets challenged into the ring of competition and he gets the tar knocked out of him. And so this is what happens. But he noticed that sexual promiscuity always precedes the collapse of a civilization. So that's why we're faced with this challenge of trying to bring back a internal moral compass, because without it, all you have is selfish human passion that turns into this lawlessness out of which people will want a strong government to restore order, and you're back to a dictator.
Wow, what a powerful word picture. You know, let's go back to that second part there of the blessing, the prosperity, that part. You have long studied how Christian values have benefited America, that those Christian values have led to God's blessings upon our country. Can you share with us a little bit about that, some of the blessings that we have? Just by way of reminder, I think it's always good for us to be reminded that when we held on to those Christian values, that it was beneficial for everyone. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, one of the studies I did was go back and research every single century of recorded human history to find out what the most common form of government is. And you have Nimrod and pharaohs and Caesars and Kaisers and sultans and czars, and it's kings top down. And with military advancements, they can kill more people. And with technological advancements, they can track more people. And to find the King of England had the biggest. The sun never set on the British Empire. He was a globalist, a one world government guy with him at the top. America's founders didn't like a one world government guy telling us what to do. They broke away and flipped it and made the people the king. So America is an experiment of a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top down, it's bottom up. Instead of kings who rule through fear, it's citizens who rule through virtue. That's one of the reasons I'm finishing up a new book. But Romans 13, there's a confusion. People say, well, let everyone be subject to the governing authority, and there's no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. And it's like, okay, the authorities that founded America set it up so that we, the people, are in charge. A republic is where the word citizen means co-king. So Romans 13 is understood differently in a monarchy versus a republic. In a monarchy, subjects submit to the king. In a republic, the citizens are the king. Subjects obey, citizens give consent, right? And so in America, the citizen is the king, the politicians are the servants, the public servants. And so it's important for us to understand the responsibility that each of us has to be involved and to let our will be the one that is carried out in Washington, D.C.
Outstanding comments there. Are you at all, I was, and so I'll preface this question by saying I was a little amazed that Dawkins actually called himself culturally Christian. What are the alternatives? As Christian values recede from our culture, some of what you're just alluding to, what's the alternatives to our culture if it is not predominantly Christian in its foundation?
Yeah, some of the writers would say that we're living off the fumes of a more religious Christian past. In 1965, 93% of Americans identified themselves as Christian. 93% in 1965. There was 69% Protestant, 24% Catholic, and then there was about 3% Jewish. So a third of the world is Christian, and it's the largest religion in the world. The second is Islam, about a quarter of the world's population. And then about 16% unaffiliated, and then about 15% Hindu, 8% Buddhist, and it goes down to 0.1% Jewish. But the Christianity is the largest religion in the world. One of the things I point out is America, Western civilization, Judeo-Christian civilization can be summed up in one word, individual. That you have a worth because you individually are made in the image of the Creator, and this Creator is not a respecter of persons. That's not so in the rest of the world. The rest of the world is group-based. In the Far East, they call it honor-shame culture. If the group honors you, your worth goes up. If the group shames you, your worth goes down. In Islam, they call it the ummah, the community. And if your daughter embarrasses you in front of your community, they'll murder their own daughter. And so in Hinduism, there's four major castes and multiple other variations. And the highest is the Brahmin. They're near divinity in the Hindu belief system. And the lowest is the Dalits, the untouchables. And if you're born as a Dalit, you have to clean the sewers and take out the trash. And no matter how good a job you do, you can never graduate in this life and move up the ladder. You're stuck. In China, they had the 100 family surnames, and they were the ruling class for centuries. And then you had these different cultures, right, where if you're a Muslim male, you're worth more. If you're a female, you're worth a little less. If you're an infidel, you're worth less. In America, it doesn't matter what religion, what sex, what ethnic background, you're equal because you're made in the image of the Creator. This is a Judeo-Christian concept. And so you have a worth as an individual, regardless of what group you belong to. In communist, atheistic, utilitarian cultures, your worth is dependent on your utility. If you can contribute to the state, you're worth more. If you can't, you're voted off the island. Well, in America, you're worth something whether you contribute or not, just by virtue of you being made in the image of the Creator. This gives the highest value to human life. And so when Richard Dawkins talks about preferring to live in a Christian culture, I think that is what he is referring to, that you're equal before the law, not based on if you're a CCP member or not. It's just the virtue that everyone's equal. So I think it's worth preserving Western civilization.
Absolutely. In our short little time remaining, what would this country look like if, fill in the blank, LGBTQ values superseded Christian values? Fill in the blank there. What would our country turn into if these Christian values are replaced with something else?
Well, let's look at it. The typical form of government is gangs, and if we were to get rid of America, you would have the Russian gang, the Chinese gang, the Iranian Ayatollah gang, the North Korea. It's going to be a gang war on a global scale with the most modern weapons, and human rights are going to be crushed. And so America is more or less holding back the floodgates of this. If we depart from Judeo-Christian values, and what's the alternative is, there's no right, there's no wrong. If there's no God, then there's no right and no wrong. And you tell the kids in school that, hey, whatever you feel like, today you can feel like a girl, tomorrow you can feel like a boy, then you can feel like a fuzzy. And these kids get pushed out of school and they have no borders, no guidelines. They just have their feelings of the day. And if they feel like somebody has something they want and they kill them, how can we get upset at them for doing what they've been trained to do? Once you remove internal morals, then the only alternative to keep law and order is to have more external restraints. It's a teeter-totter. The more internal restraints the populace has, the less external restraints they need.
Real quickly, where can people find out more about you and get some books?
Thank you, Jody. My website's AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com, and one of the recent books is Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present.
We got to wrap it up right there. Bill, thank you so much. Friends, that wraps up another week of Washington Watch. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you next week right here.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.